Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is The Guardian. I had to go about it,
write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. Welcome to The Final Word Ashes Daily, and a very happy new year to you wherever you are. I'm Emma John, and I'm in the UK, where the sun's still not deigning to rise until after 8am, while over in Sydney, my colleagues Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon have spent the day dodging the kind of rain showers that England would have welcomed a little earlier in this series. But we are where we are. New year, new Ashes goals. For England, the fantasy of regaining the urn has lifted like a sweaty fever dream, and in its place comes a more modest but no less vital mission. Can Joe Root's savagely humiliated team find even one worthy performance on this tour? Can they take a test off Pat Cummins' Aussies, or even just draw one? Can they win back the tiniest smidge of their dignity? Well, today at the Sydney Cricket Ground, they had a good go. It probably helped that they lost a toss, so it was their bowlers who got the first chance to show some spirit. Anderson and Broad effectively opened the bowling twice as recurring rain turned this into one of those hokey-cokey four-session days. And even though we only got 47 overs, it still felt like plenty of cricket. England's 1-2 combo to Australia's openers looked good. Anderson swinging the ball away from the left-handers, Broad spearing it in. But this was a nice pitch for batting, and David Warner and Marcus Harris had put on 50 for the first wicket before Broad made a post-lunch breakthrough, Warner driving and edging to second slip. Broad created chances off Manus Labuschagne too. In three consecutive deliveries, he had him towing an edge to third man, floating the next past leg slip, then thudding one into his pads off an inside edge. But maybe there was a ghostly 12th man in this game. Perhaps the Admiral Horatio Lord Nelson himself was looking down on the British efforts with pride, because the score was 111 when things really started to go England's way. Anderson finding Harris's edge before Mark Wood returned to the attack and removed Labuschagne with only his second delivery. Australia finished the day 126 for 3, and with more rain forecast throughout this test, there's considerable hope that England might, just might, be in with a chance of redemption. But let's hear Adam and Jeff's thoughts on that subject from Sydney.
Day one of Sydney, rain marred, but impactful in its own way. James Anderson playing his 169th test match. Only Sachin Tendulkar with 200 stands above him now. His fifth at the SCG. He took 7 wickets here back in 2011. But it was a moment of, I felt anyway, a moment of Anderson experience that intervened on a day that was trending a certain way. Australia were 111 for 1 at the point when he said, you know what, I might want to change this ball, umpire. Can we have a look, sir? And umpire Rod Tucker agreed with him. Often it can take a while to build momentum for such a thing.
It did. They tried about 16 times before that and he couldn't get it. No, said the umpires. No, said the umpires. And then eventually they said yes.
Yeah. And look, I mean, at that particular juncture, I thought they'd have no luck, but it had gone to the boundary four times since the tee break, which I think coincided with the fourth rain delay, something like that. It was a long interval. And Anderson gets the ball going, the new ball after 29 and a half overs, gets that going. An over later, he gets Marcus Harris, or a couple of overs later. An over after that, it's Mark Wood picking up Labuschagne. And Labuschagne has been, I saw a stat today saying that he's not made less than 47 in the first innings of a test match since when he first came back in 2019 at Lords. I mean, it's an incredible record. And Wood's nicked him off twice in a week and a half. So that gives you a sense to Wood's broader worth in this England team. Yeah. And England take the honours. 126 for three at the close of play. The three wickets are more important than the runs, and they can come back tomorrow with a bit of wind in the sails.
A little bit of wind in the sails. I mean, this could still get away from them pretty quickly. I think let's not get people too overexcited who are supporting England at this stage because, yeah, Australia three down, sure. Steve Smith is there. You may have heard of him. Pretty good at cricket. Likes batting. Some stories about that online. Did you know he used to be a leg spinner? Started out as a leg spinner. Should look that up. And Usman Khawaja is there, batting at five. Weird spot for him, but looked pretty composed in the little bit that he had to do to make sure that he got through to the last rain delay, the last of about five rain delays that saw us through to stumps. So he'll come back tomorrow, and they could still build their way to a big lead. And also, with England's batting, they don't necessarily need to build their way to a big lead. They could make 250, and that might be enough. So England still have a long way to go, but I appreciate the cause for optimism from an English side in that they bowled well at points where they could have slipped out of the game. That 51 for the first partnership, 60 for the second, and either of those could have gone big, and eventually they found a way to peg them back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if either of those partnerships kick on, we're having a very different conversation. Regarding Usman Khawaja, I spoke to him before play today. It sounds like a cliche when he says it and he acknowledges it, but he's like, I'm satisfied with where I am on my cricketing journey. Like, it feels to me like he's a guy who knows this might be his last test match. It could be. Yeah. Travis Head's back in the squad for Hobart next week. He's going to be permitted to rejoin the team on Saturday following his COVID-19 infection. But it's entirely possible that they go, thanks for your service this week, Usman. Travis is back next week into his spot. And Usman called it Travis's spot when talking to him today. And that might be it. On the other hand, he makes runs here. He'll probably be the spare batter that goes to Pakistan, in of itself an amazing story given it's his country of birth, then to Sri Lanka, then to India, and who knows where we are at the start of the next summer. I mean, he's talked about Chris Rogers' career being a bit of an inspiration to him, where after age 35 it's when he got a great opportunity to play 24 of his 25 test matches. Well, that could still yet be the case for Khawaja. He's playing the sort of cricket at the moment that feels unburdened to an extent. He's liberated from his own head, maybe, from the pressure that was on his shoulders when he was a senior player, not perhaps quite delivering in the way that he would have liked. So, I'm going to be fascinated to watch him play. And the reception he received today from the Sydney crowd, 25,000 people here, the same gates he walked out 11 years ago on Test debut against England, very different circumstances then with Australia having already lost the series. But coming out today, a very different man, but he's there, not out overnight, and who knows what's possible tomorrow.
That was going to be my Hall of Fame, but I might as well bring it in now. Just that rousing reception, the circularity, the debut here. I tell you what, if he makes 37 tomorrow and gets 8 pages written about him in the newspaper, time will have come full circle. But I want to talk to you, Adam, about David Warner and Stuart Broad. And I just want to, something we like doing, a little bit of myth-busting here on the show. The response to it was predictable, right? Warner gets out to Broad, edges him into the cordon on 30. And everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people go, see, I told you, Broad should have been in this team all along because he would have got David Warner out every innings because of the psychological hold he has over him. Blah, blah, blah. 2019 Ashes, averaging 9, whatever. Stuart Broad bowled to David Warner through the entire 17-18 Ashes and didn't get him out once. David Warner averaged 66 or 64 in that series.
Yeah, better well at Melbourne in
Stuart Broad got him out maybe 3 times in 13-14 when Warner made a couple of hundreds and all the rest of it. Stuart Broad bowling
to second innings tons. Stuart running up the scoreboard before they declared.
Brisbane was a decent one.
Well ahead.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Stuart Broad bowling to David Warner in Australia is different to Stuart Broad bowling to David Warner in England. And I think there has been a conflation of the two that says that everything would have been different if Broad had been bowling to Warner. I would also note that Broad got Warner out with a good delivery, but not an England delivery. Not one of those horrible, unplayables from around the wicket where it's coming in, it's angling in, and is it going to seam away and nick him behind, or is it going to seam in and pin him LBW? He can't do anything about either. He doesn't know what to do. Warner chased a wide one today because he wanted to drive one through the covers and the length wasn't there and he edged it into the cordon. It wasn't a psychological victory of Stuart Broad. That was David Warner playing a bad shot. So I just want to get in ahead of the idea that everything would have been different if this selection had been made, because it wouldn't have, because England still can't bat.
Yeah, I just reiterate that Broad should have played at Brisbane before the England team were mentally bashed up there on day one. If Broad plays day one at Brisbane on a, not a green top, but a pitch that gave plenty of assistance to Australia's fast bowlers, and they play the best card they've got, then then maybe he would have had the chance to have inflicted some kind of psychological damage on Warner that existed from 2019. The difference was that he didn't play at Brisbane. Warner batted manfully, to say the least, at Brisbane, getting through some really tough periods, gets to 94, 95. And then Broad plays the next week on a flatty at Adelaide, bowls really, really well, best of the bowlers on day one, and Warner gets 95. But it wasn't on account of Broad not creating opportunities against Warner. I think he was up with the DRS twice in the first half an hour. So, I mean, I'm not sure whether it's as much of people misinterpreting today as lamenting the fact that that contest didn't continue from the Oval in 2019. It should have continued at Brisbane on the first day there, and that was one of the myriad strategic and tactical mistakes that England have made through the series. I actually thought that for all the criticism of Anderson and Broad at the very, very start of today, Anderson was off with his first over. He bowled the better of the two to start with, but they were doing something quite different from each other, and I quite liked looking at the pitch map there. Anderson was bowling full and trying to get them driving. Broad was back of a length and trying to get them playing aggressively and trying to get them scoring runs. I think Crickview's had a bit of analysis on that. I mean, look, Broad and Anderson, no matter what they do at this stage of their career, they're going to prompt strong opinions. They've always bowled the best spell ever or the worst spell ever. It's very rare that Anderson and Broad bowl these days, and it passes without comment.
Yeah, people say, you know what, it's fine. I'm glad they were there. I feel indifferent.
They bowled well today, but they didn't bowl the house down. Or you know, that always gets read as, they're too old.
They got to go.
They're too old. They got to go, or Jimmy should play till he's 50. I mean, Jimmy said on the Tail Enders podcast the other day that at age 39, he feels as though he's playing his best cricket. And I mean, it's kind of hard to dispute that. He's a very different bowler. I mean, you saw the haircut today. I was going to say this on my BT thing and forgot. He's got the Tommy Shelby the Don Mattingly haircut.
Shaved the sides.
Kind of my Hall of Fame as
well. I said, get rid of those sideburns.
Get rid of those sideburns, Mattingly, or you're sacked. And he was sacked. But I mean, he's had as many hair reinventions as he has reinventions as a bowler.
He was bowling 138 today.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at his pace. When he first started, he was a tearaway, and he's refined his game. You could say more haircuts than, you know, reinventions than Kylie Minogue. You know, it's getting to that stage now. That just sort of felt reflective of the way he's played 5 test matches at this ground, took 7 wickets in 2011. He was a match winner, 4 in the first, 3 in the second then. Did everything right here 4 years ago, other than be able to dismiss Usman Khawaja. He bowled sort of like 36 overs, conceding about 38 runs or something ridiculous. He kept Australia under pressure the whole time until the heat took over and they elected not to bowl him into his imminent death. Thought he bowled well. But again, I think a big part of it comes down to that experience of trying to get the ball changed. Mm-hmm. And that was the moment that I think we'll look back on as the turning point in the day's cricket.
So, wicket for Broad, wicket for Anderson. Back of a length, moving away a little bit. Marcus Harris poked at it. Didn't need to, but he always does. Although I thought he played better than he did in Melbourne today, Marcus Harris. It's the best I've seen him in terms of fluency and control. Even though he only made 38, he was... in those two big partnerships, which I thought was important. And then a wicket for Mark Wood. And this was interesting because Jack Leach was bowling a couple of these pointless Jack Leach overs that Root has him bowl now, did in Melbourne and did here, where he bowls left arm around the wicket to a left-hander down the line of leg stump with fielders on the fence. Like, what are you doing? Like,
What they're trying to do, or my sense of what they're trying to do, is bowl him into the test match by giving him the chance to not get clobbered in the first couple of overs. So bowling a defensive line with a defensive field. I mean, I know it's not the classical way of doing it.
Well, you can't put training wheels on a test bowler.
No, I agree. I think it's a function of where they're at.
You're good enough or you're not good enough to play.
I think it's a function of where they're at. He's clearly good enough to play.
I think it's a function where Root's at, because I think Leach is a better bowler than that. Yeah, he got whacked and that can happen to any bowler. But
it gets him into the game in a way that if he goes for... What did he go for in his first three overs at Brisbane? 36?
Something like that. 11,
it just gives him the chance
96.
To finish tonight with none for three off two and he comes back tomorrow not being none for 13 off one or something. It's just a sort of a management process.
It's a root thing. Where Root after Brisbane said, I set two aggressive fields and I shouldn't have done that. And now he's overcompensating to this massive degree rather than backing his bowler to some extent. But Leach bowls those couple of overs and then the wicket falls of Harris. And Smith comes in. And this was Root's good captaincy move. He goes, get Mark Wood on to bowl at Smith.
And it worked.
Because Wood got him nicking in Brisbane. It worked the other way. He got Labuschagne instead.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. It was either of them. You take either of them at this point. And it was pace again. And it was... Remember Bharat Sundaresan's story the other day about Labuschagne bragging in the nets that no one had found his outside edge in 5 months or whatever it was. And he bet someone his car that they couldn't get his outside edge with the dog thrower. Well, Mark Wood's nicked him off twice in consecutive tests.
Yeah, it's a big turning point. I mean, it's an early turning point, but presumably a big one because of what I mentioned before about the first innings. And you just look at his record here. He averages 95 at the SCG. Once he's in for good. I watched him bat for quarter of an hour yesterday in the nets and he didn't put a foot out of place. He defended and left splendidly. I know it's the dog thrower and all the rest of it, but it gives you a sense of his mindset. So extra pace from Wood. We've been saying it all series, really. With Wood, that's England's only real point of difference.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson and Broad, as experienced as they are at doing their thing, Wood does offer something that's going to make Labuschagne have to make different kinds of decisions. So that was huge today. Smith averages 75 here. I mean, every grand in Australia, Smith averages a million at because he's had such profound success at home. But him and Khawaja tomorrow, it'll present a different challenge, presumably rain again. But look, I think at least England haven't rocked up here and been smashed up on day one, which...
Yeah, at least they're not 6 for 72 from 30 overs amongst the rain.
Or 172 for one, which for about 5 minutes thought that might be the trajectory this was going. So they come back tomorrow. They're in the scrap. They've done a lot of things right. And they've caught everything. And they looked a team that was fairly galvanised today. And look, obviously, it comes down to whether they can get rid of Smith early.
Yeah, and this is where Smith made his last Test 100 a year ago against India. His one century for that series. So Smith and Khawaja coming out tomorrow. Tasty little contest. And Cameron Green still hasn't made a run in the series, really. So, big for him.
Yeah, speaking of Bharat, he's been declaring that Green's going to make his first Test century this week, so our friend will see. We'll have him on the show soon to talk all about that, I am sure. So the final word, Hall of Fame, the most final word moment of the day. To some respect, I think we've kind of ran through these already. I've got listed here Jimmy's haircut, Don Mattingly, ? Tommy Shelby, ? Rain, washout, that didn't happen, so we can ignore those stats that I thought might be relevant. A 420 restart, we always like to light it up on the final word when it's 420 at a cricket game, and today that prompted plenty of activity on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
The SCG history with those two blokes, Anderson and Broad, I've talked about that as well, as we have Usman's entrance to the ground. So I've already done my clean sweep.
You spent. Okay, what else have I got? Well, I've been doing a fair bit of work with Andy Zaltzman and his statistics.
Yes.
So maybe I can throw in two good Andy Zaltzman stats that came out today. Said Andy Zaltzman, has there ever been an Australian innings in which the top three all made more than 30 and less than 45? Yes. One, and it was in 1887.
Oh, right. Where was it?
It was either here or in England, I presume. I don't remember. But it has happened once before, but not for 100 and, 30 years?
And I'm tipping, given the time, George Lohman would have got them all out on the way to an eight-wicket bag
Billy Bates or Billy Bragg or whoever.
Or Bobby Peel might have been
Bobby Brown,
as well.
Millie Bobby Brown. who knows at this stage. The other one is, there was a point today because on Test Match Special because Jonathan Agnew was sick. Henry Moran had to
I did see this.
Do some pinch hitting.
Making his test debut, presumably.
His men's test debut, yeah. Yep. And so he was on with Alex Hartley, and Zaltzman noted that this was the first time that TMS had had two commentators who were younger than both of the bowlers operating at the time with Broad and Anderson with the ball. So, you know, the M stands for millennial in TMS. It's a generation change.
Fantastic. Okay, I think that's it for us today. This has been the Final Word Daily. If you like what we do, you can follow us in all the usual places, including patreon.com/thefinerword. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all again. Let's see whether England can have two good days in a row. Until then, good night from Sydney. Bye.
Bye. I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some
stories I can tell you. I had to fail. That's it for today. Thanks from Adam, Jeff and me for listening. We will see you back here tomorrow. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast or leave us a rating or review that'll help people to find us. This episode was produced by Sophia Tarek. The Final Word is produced by Bad Producer Productions and edited by James Hurley. And the executive producer is Miles Martinoni.